Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Tempting the Titan by Fern Fraser, narrated by Sierra Klein and Paul Bryan. Chapter 1. Celeste. I've seen my fair share of towns in my years as part of a traveling circus, but there's something uniquely enchanting about Screaming Woods. Every corner I turn brings me to something new, like the bakery with sweet-smelling pastries and cookies. The heavenly fragrance of vanilla and cinnamon makes me drool. Right beside the bakery is a flower shop boasting an explosion of vibrant and exotic blooms, making my heart sing. And don't get me started on the bookstore. If only time would slow down, and my wallet could magically refill itself, I'd gladly lose track of hours in there, exploring shelves upon shelves of new books. My phone beeps. It's a text from my brother. Brody.
What's the town like?
Me. So far, so good. The town of Screaming Woods is booming. Everywhere I look, there are new constructions and establishments. Every store and eatery is bustling with activity. On the surface, this location is the ideal spot to begin my new life. Although I've heard rumors about the creatures living in Screaming Woods, I haven't seen any. The estate where I live is full of regular people, but this is my first day exploring the town. I've been saving for a while, not a large amount, but my brother and I inherited money from an insurance payout when our parents died in a car crash last year. Brody spent his money on a specialty motocross bike and equipment, but I wanted a home. While working at the circus, I met a salesman who told me about an affordable housing development in a town I'd never heard of. He offered me a sign-on bonus, no down payment, extremely low interest rates, and no tax for the first few years, making it an offer I couldn't refuse. Brody.
Have you seen any monsters yet?
Me. Do you still believe in fairy tales, baby brother? I sent him a laughing emoji. If there's one thing I've learned in my 26 years on this earth, it's that fairy tales are for children. I shrug and laugh it off. Maybe the town is built on an old nuclear waste site, and the authorities are keeping it quiet. Perhaps my overactive imagination is conjuring up stories again. Regardless, the townhome I bought is all I can afford. Now I need a job to help me pay the mortgage. Me. I need a dash. I have a job interview soon. It's going to rain, and I need to buy an umbrella. Brody.
I bet you look great. Don't mess up your outfit.
Me. My feet are killing me. I've been walking around checking out my new town for what feels like hours. I'm not used to wearing tight-fitting office clothes and high heels. The unforgiving asphalt is making my feet throb in protest. Brody.
I'm surprised you could wedge your flippers into shoes.
He adds a gif of clown shoes, so I send him another laughter emoji. Growing up in the circus, I hardly ever wore shoes, and I'm not used to squeezing myself into snug outfits and fancy pumps. Me. The clown act was more your thing than mine. How's Millie? Millie was one of the circus ponies I used to care for. Brody.
She's great, but she misses you.
Me. I miss her too. A moment later, a photo of Millie appears on my screen, and a rush of emotion washes over me. My heart swells with joy and melancholy as I gaze at the image of the pony who holds a special place in my heart. Brody.
Hey, what will you do if a monster chases you down the street?
It's just like my brother to change the subject when things get emotional. I send an eye roll emoji. Me. When can you visit me? Brody.
Not yet. I'm training for the big motocross show. It's in a couple of months. Make or break time, you know?
Me. So exciting. You'll ace it. Brody.
Back at you, sis. You'll nail the job interview once the boss meets you.
Me. Hopefully. It's a phone interview, but I'm visiting the office in person to see if I'm comfortable working in the area. Brody.
You dressed up for a phone call? You're a good little Girl Scout.
He attaches a gif of Elle from Legally Blonde. If we were face to face, I'd punch him. The joke only makes me miss him more. I knew leaving home wouldn't be easy, but it hurts more than I expected. Me. You know it. Talk later. I add a winking emoji and slip the phone into my bag. As I make my way down the street, I spot a small shop with a wooden sign that reads Spirits and Potions. Intrigued, I stop in front of the window and peer at the shelves groaning under the weight of whimsical gifts and curiosities. Suddenly, a woman sporting fabulous blue hair and a beaming smile emerges from behind a curtain at the back of the shop. "Welcome to Spirits and Potions," she chirps. "Can I help you?" I hesitate for a moment, captivated by her energy. I've always been interested in the supernatural, but I grew up in a circus and saw all the secrets behind the magic. It's hard for me to believe that there are genuinely inexplicable things in the world. I return her smile. "This place caught my eye, but I'm not looking for anything," she chuckles. "This place draws people in. Are you interested in the mystical and magical?" I shake my head. "No, thanks. I'm only exploring." The woman's expression changes. She stares into the distance at the dust motes dancing in a beam of sunlight. "The winds of change led you to this unfamiliar place. Destiny will ignite the fire within you and fulfill your soul's deepest desires."
Okay. Thanks.
Right now, my soul's deepest desire is to get a job so I can pay the mortgage. I retreat, taking measured steps as I resume my journey. No more wandering like a tourist. It's time to locate the building where my potential new job awaits. I quicken my pace until I arrive at a modest brick office building bearing a discreet sign, North Star Detective Agency. As I stand on the street corner, taking in the surroundings, the faint aroma of coffee drifts from a nearby cafe, teasing my senses. The moment kindles an image of me buying coffee on the way to work at North Star. Light rain begins to fall. Its soft pitter-patter taps the pavement. Clutching my phone tightly, I tuck myself under an awning to avoid getting wet and inhale deeply, filling my lungs with cool air to settle my nerves. With trembling hands and a racing heart, I dial the number.
"North Star Detective Agency," declares the man on the other end. His assertive tone leaves no room for small talk or pleasantries. I take a deep breath, determined to make a good impression.
"Hello, Celeste McGroth," I say, striving to keep my voice steady. "We have an interview scheduled." A tense silence envelops the line, stretching into eternity. The strength in my knees wanes with each passing second, and they threaten to give way beneath me. The man finally breaks the silence, his voice like gravel as he says,
Yes. Thank you for calling. I'm Atlas Everlast, the owner. I reviewed your resume, and while your study credentials are impressive, there are no references. Could you tell me why before we continue?"
The weight of his question presses down on me, threatening to crush my hopes and dreams. "I've been traveling the country, and my paperwork got lost. But I can provide phone numbers for verbal character references," I explain earnestly.
"I see,"
he says coolly. Sweat beads on my temple. His opinion matters, but how can I spark his interest and leave a lasting impression? "I may not have direct experience working in an office like yours, but I've been working in one way or another my entire life. I'm a quick learner and adaptable to any situation." A nervous smile tugs at the corners of my lips. I hope my answer didn't sound as desperate as it felt.
"Why do you want to work for North Star? What attracted you to this position?"
My gaze drifts to the window, wishing I could glimpse inside the office. I remember scrolling endlessly through job postings online, each blending into another and creating a sea of monotony. The North Star ad caught my attention. Although I desire stability, I cannot settle for a monotonous and draining existence. "I'm interested in the private investigation business," I admit honestly.
"I'm sorry, but the job opening is for a receptionist, not an investigator,"
Mr. Everlast clarifies, with a hint of annoyance. I nod, although he can't see me. "I understand, but it sounds like an interesting industry."
Nor am I training anyone to be an investigator, he states firmly, the words hanging in the air like a challenge.
Got it. I appreciate your honesty, I say softly. The weight of my aspirations presses against my chest as my desire for this job increases with each passing moment. The distant sound of traffic fills my ears, mingling with the hum of conversations from nearby pedestrians. Which types of cases do you handle at this agency? I ask, genuinely interested. I searched online but couldn't find anything.
I value privacy, he grumbles. I swallow the lump in my throat.
Of course.
Mostly forensic accounting investigations, Atlas adds. Ignoring his unpleasant demeanor, I probe deeper.
No cheating spouses, inheritance disputes, or stolen items?
A heavy sigh escapes him, as if I'm wearing down his patience. It's not a glamorous job. This isn't a TV show.
Is it the weariness of his profession seeping into his words, or something else? Is he going through a tough time? His sadness and pain are palpable. My smile doesn't waver, despite his response. I bet you have some fascinating stories to tell. Atlas clears his throat.
I keep to myself, both personally and professionally. I focus solely on the work and prefer to operate from behind the scenes.
My lips curl into a gentle smile. That sounds intriguing. It's even more exciting than I expected. I've never met a private investigator before. Perhaps he's guarded because of an injury sustained on the job. Or maybe he's one of the so-called monsters.
Yeah, right. I'd better keep my mouth shut. I understand the importance of professional boundaries, and I need the job.
Rain falls harder, and the wind blows sideways. With no umbrella to use as cover, the awning offers little protection. It's becoming more difficult to hear Atlas as he continues to fire questions. I sense he's testing my strength and loyalty.
Are you capable of following directives without question? He demands.
I reply with a resolute, yes. I live for clear boundaries after growing up the way I did. He emits a low, approving grunt, indicating his satisfaction. Awesome. Maybe I'm winning him over.
Can I trust you to keep certain information confidential? He asks.
Of course, I answer confidently. Another grunt of approval.
Are you scared of anything? Squeamish?
Rain begins falling in relentless sheets, slicking the streets and plastering my hair against my face. My eyes sting, and my office clothes stick to my skin, heavy with rainwater, making me shiver. My stomach is tied in knots, but I answer honestly, no, I don't scare easily.
It's true. I've seen it all, and nothing rattles me. Can you think on your feet? He asks.
Yes, I reply without hesitation.
Are you comfortable working alone and in silence?
I prefer it. Mr. Everlast's tone is becoming friendlier and more relaxed. I have a knack for making friends, even with shy people. Although it warms my heart, what matters most is that he's happy with my answers and considers me for the job. A lightning flash illuminates the office, revealing a tall man staring at me through the window. An odd feeling of deja vu comes over me as I recall the blue-haired fortune teller's prediction. Did she mean something more than a place to live?
Chapter 2. Atlas. You think monsters don't exist? They do in Screaming Woods. Formerly known as Stream in the Woods, it was an idyllic place to raise a family until an accident at a Halloween gathering many years ago shattered the town's serenity. This mishap occurred due to a mix-up of ingredients used by Dr. Karloff to create Frankenpunch. He mistakenly used Imani Semper, always monstrous, instead of Felix Semper, always happy, and those who drank the brew transformed into monsters. While the community accepts monsters, I missed many opportunities growing up. I'd hoped to play competitive sports and wanted to pursue a career in law enforcement, but unfortunately, those options were not available to monsters. My best friend, Knox, was sick the night of the Halloween party, so he was unaffected. His family left town, and he joined the FBI. But he never left me. We work together, solving complex crimes he can't handle alone. While he navigates the bureaucracy, I play a role in the investigations. But we keep our collaboration a secret. I make a comfortable living, but as more people move to Screaming Woods, the demand for my services has increased, which is why I'm actively searching for the ideal candidate to represent my company in a public-facing role. I've been advertising the role for months, but haven't received any responses. While Celeste is the only applicant, I believe she's the most suitable. We've only been talking for a few minutes, but I'm drawn to her and enjoy her softly spoken confidence. She poses pointed questions and delivers biting quips. It's been threatening rain all day, but when the deluge begins, it hits hard. I push to my feet and stride to the window to close it. The sash sticks, so I tuck the phone between my ear and shoulder, pulling harder on the stuck sash as I struggle to close the window. "Sorry, one second," I say into the phone before it slips from my shoulder. I curse under my breath, bending to pick it up. Lightning sears the sky, and I see a woman on the street below staring straight at me. "Where are you calling from?" Her voice is muffled. "I'm outside the office." Damn, it's Celeste. Shivering, she wipes rain from her eyes. She's drenched from head to toe, and desperately in need of shelter. "Why don't you come inside and we'll finish the interview?" "Thank you so much." Celeste races into the lobby. I watch her through the security camera, the click of her heels on the tiles echoing down the phone line as she leaves small puddles on the entryway floor. I take in every detail of her delicate yet purposeful movements as she gracefully removes her soggy coat and tucks it under her arm. She's so much smaller than me. Her body is full and voluptuous, with generous breasts, wide hips, and solid thighs. Her damp clothes stick to her skin, but she tries to straighten herself and fix her bedraggled appearance. I'll need to protect her if she doesn't know how to shelter from the rain. I frown at the random thought. Celeste awakens sensations I haven't felt in a long time. Dangerous desires. I drink in every soft, curvaceous inch, unable to tear my gaze away. Fuck. I haven't been sexually intimate with a woman in how long? The trigger could be anything, sexual, physical, or emotional. But when the transformation begins, it's impossible to resist. To live among humans, I must wear a specially designed brace that exerts pressure on my muscles, keeping them restrained. The brace is essential to hiding my immense power as a titan and allows me to blend in with ordinary humans. Despite the constant discomfort, wearing the brace means I'm in control and those around me are safe from harm. But I wasn't expecting to meet with Celeste today, so I'm not wearing the brace. A storm rages within me, and panic sets in when she climbs the stairs to my office. The fear of revealing my monster self and the anxiety about her reaction urges me to flee the North Star office and seek refuge in the apartment I keep above. I'm a jerk for running out on her, but the fear of rejection looms in the back of my mind. I switch on the security cameras in my apartment and watch Celeste enter. Stripping off my casual clothes, I put on the harness. I hastily grab my suit, pants, shirt, and jacket, but accidentally knock over a heavy ceramic vase. It rolls off the sideboard, landing with a loud thunk. Although it's too thick to shatter, it makes a hell of a noise as it rolls along the wood floor. "Hello?" Her voice is soft and sweet, filled with a hint of excitement. Her eyes, a captivating shade of hazel, cautiously survey the room, darting from corner to corner. Celeste pauses and stares at the empty hook on the coat rack, holding a collection of coats, walking canes, and hats. A large mahogany desk sits in the center of the room, and the soft glow of the desk lamp casts a warm amber hue across the bookcases lining the walls. She continues to search the room, skipping past the dusty bookshelves full of antiquated books, and lingers on the stack of folders and papers strewn across my desk. She's waiting for me, but I'm not showing my face, not yet. My fingertips drum the smooth stone kitchen countertop, grounding me. I send a message to her cell, instructing her to pick up the office phone. A moment later, the old-fashioned rotary phone on my desk, a relic of a bygone era, rings.
"Hello, Mr. Everlast?"
"Welcome." Celeste clutches the phone, but glances behind her at the door.
"Am I in the right place?"
I clear my throat. "You are. Please make yourself comfortable." Celeste wrinkles her nose before finally sinking into the armchair. She eases the small bag off her shoulder and puts it on the ground. Her vibrant pink blouse adds a pop of color to the subdued surroundings. "Do you feel better?"
"Yes, thanks to you," she replies, relief evident in her voice.
"Good. We can continue the interview. Now, do you have any questions for me?" She furrows her brows.
"I thought I was going to meet you. Was that you standing in the window wearing a Trilby hat?"
So many questions. I rub the back of my neck while trying to think of a reasonable excuse. "Yes, it was me. But something came up and I had to leave." Celeste nods and lightly taps her fingertips on the armrest.
"So when are you coming back?"
Raindrops tap against the windowpane. "I'm not sure. I'm working from home for a while."
"Are you a private investigator because you're a secretive person?"
I let out an easy laugh. "I never thought of it that way."
"I don't mean to pry."
A flush spreads across her cheeks, and her voice is tinged with unease. "It's fine," I say, waving away her concern.
"Sorry, boss."
The hint of sass in her voice makes me smile. I'm impressed by her audacity. I've already decided to hire her, but prod a bit more. "What do you believe is the most important quality for success?" She closes her eyes briefly, contemplating her answer.
"Perseverance,"
she declares with conviction.
"The ability to keep pushing forward, even when things get tough."
A small smile tugs at the corner of my lips. I couldn't agree more. Celeste sighs, and the tension drops from her shoulders. It's time to put her out of her misery. "If you can follow the rules, the job is yours."
"Thank you so much. I won't let you down."
Her face lights up, and her infectious enthusiasm makes me want to improve my grumpy attitude.
"When do I start?"
"I'm available any time." "Tomorrow. Your work hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Your office key is on the hook on the coat rack. Please lock up when you leave." Celeste nods as her gaze shifts to the coat rack.
"Thank you. Would you prefer your messages to be delivered via email or a messaging platform?"
"Good question. Email works best for general communication, but you have my number and can message me for anything urgent."
"Got it. Thank you, Mr. Everlast."
Ouch. It makes me sound old.
"Please call me Atlas." "You won't regret this, Atlas," she says.
The sound of my name on her tongue sets me on fire. Oh, I'll regret it, but for entirely different reasons than she thinks.
Chapter 3. Celeste. Our conversation is suddenly interrupted by chair legs scraping against a wood floor above. A subtle thud accompanies the scrape as the chair settles into its new position. A click and bang of a door closing causes a shiver to run down my spine, because, strange as it seems, I could swear the sound echoes down the phone line. Did Atlas lie to me? Is he upstairs? "Wait a moment. I hear something. It sounds like someone's outside. Let me go and check," I announce with urgency. Although Atlas made it clear that he wasn't training me to be an investigator, I can't help tapping into my inner Girl Scout instincts and embracing my role as a diligent employee. I'm determined to investigate. I swiftly rise from my seat, a rush of energy pulsing through me as I race to the door. "Hello?" My voice projects into the empty hallway and staircase leading to the upper level. It's dark in the lobby, and my voice sounds small and insignificant. Although I don't see anything, I can't shake the feeling that someone's watching me. Just as I turn to go back inside, the entire floor vibrates with slow, deliberate footsteps, which seem to be coming closer. The skin on the back of my neck prickles. I spin, and my gaze falls on a towering giant. He must be 7 feet tall and looks like he's carved of stone. I sweep his tall, suited form from top to bottom, squinting as I try to get a better view. My eyes linger on his bulging muscles, which threaten to burst the seams of his impeccably tailored suit. The man's all-black attire makes him blend in with the dark surroundings, and his broad shoulders seem to take up more room than they should. Atlas? My voice trembles over his name. His dark-eyed stare, chiseled jaw, and olive skin make my heart beat faster. A strange tightness grips my lower belly. His anxiety is palpable as he hesitates.
You're not scared of me? Of how I look?
I beckon him closer. The brim of his hat casts a shadow over his eyes and adds an air of mystery to his appearance. No. Why would I be scared? Because you're bigger than most people? His appearance doesn't intimidate or repulse me, because I see beyond societal expectations and norms. To me, he is simply unique, extraordinary. His skin catches the light and glimmers.
Yes, I wasn't expecting us to meet, and I didn't want to shock you.
Are the rumors true? Your skin glows. What are you?
Human and something else,
he replies, his lips curling into a secretive smile. His deep, resonant voice twists my insides, and when he comes closer, my breath hitches. He's so close that my eyes line up with his broad chest. I lift my chin higher until his wide neck comes into view. I don't want to pry, but I'm curious. Finally, my gaze meets his. So the rumors about Screaming Woods are true? He nods. But how? I whisper, looking for answers in his eyes.
It happened a long time ago, he says, his expression pensive. But that's a story for another time.
I nod, satisfied and disappointed. My eyes widen. His glowing skin tempts me. You're beautiful, I whisper, reaching out before I can stop myself.
Thank you, he replies,
his voice like a caress. A shiver runs down my spine as his hand wraps around mine, holding it gently. His skin is as smooth as silk and warm to the touch. He's not a monster at all.
I won't hurt you, Celeste.
His sharp, dark eyes pin me where I stand. I believe Atlas is telling the truth. The office door swings open, and Atlas makes a grand entrance. He's wearing a sharp, tailored suit, topped off with what I now know is his signature look, a stylish fedora hat perched on his head. As he makes his way to his desk, he asks,
How are you enjoying your job so far?
I am certainly busy, I reply. I'm keen to impress and eager to hear his thoughts. I've digitized as many files as possible and archived the paper files in boxes.
I've been meaning to get around to it, he says.
I've got it under control. I beam with pride at feeling useful. What do you think of the new organizing system? He glances at the sleek whiteboard, but the hat casts a shadow over his piercing eyes.
It's an improvement.
He reaches his desk and settles into the high back chair. The supple leather molds to his form as he adjusts his posture, leans back, and puts his hands on the armrests. He looks like a king sitting on his throne. Great, I reply. I have more ideas I want to talk to you about.
Sure. As long as you don't hide the coffee or cookies, we'll get along fine.
I shake my head. Well, I was going to suggest switching them out with kale smoothies for a healthier working environment. Atlas's eyes snap to mine, but he lets out an easy laugh when he sees my expression. He rubs his hand across the back of his neck. Let me know if you need anything else, and I can tackle it after hours.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?